Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is the Soundcheck Podcast.
On the way to paperback was on my knee. Man, I had a dreadful flight. I'm back in the USSR. You don't know how lucky you are, boys. Back in the USSR.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. So all week we've been doing our series From Russia with Soundcheck. Now we're back in the USSR with the Beatles. Actually, the Beatles do have a tangential relationship to Russia, which we can talk about in a bit. But today is the 50th anniversary of the day when the Beatles first landed at JFK Airport. And joining me in the studio to talk about the Beatles' American invasion is New York Times culture reporter and author of a biography about the Beatles, Alan Kozin. Alan, welcome back.
Thank you, John. Great to be here.
So paint a picture for us of the scene, New York, February 1964. What was it like?
You know, at Kennedy Airport, there were probably a couple of thousand fans. I'm not sure there's an actual count, but we see film footage, and they're all over the airport. Not all of them were fans. Some people were there to protest.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. There were particularly among young men. I think people didn't like the fact that their girlfriends were so stuck on, you know, this mop top group. And, you know, when you see interviews with them, I can refer people to there's a video called The Beatles' First U.S. Visit that was done by the Maisels brothers, mm-hmm. Who were sort of great cinema verite artists. And this was sort of at the beginning of their career. They got access to the Beatles pretty much full time. They got to hang out with them in their hotel rooms. And they filmed everything on the trip. And in that footage and in TV station footage, which, you know, gets brought out on occasions like this, you see some of these interviews with, you know, sort of crew cut guys saying, you know, I don't like this Beatles stuff, you know. But most of the people were there to sort of, you know, scream and carry on and hold up signs saying, welcome, Beatles. And
had there ever been anything like this? I mean, did presidents get this kind of attention when they landed at airports?
Probably not. But, you know, Sinatra and Elvis Presley might have.
It's just phenomenal that people would come to see this, and yet they wouldn't come to see the president. I mean, President Johnson came a few days ago, and there's practically nobody here except reporters and photographers.
I'd rather listen to a good jazz show any day, like Mingus or Mulligan, but not the Beatles.
See, we don't usually like rock and roll.
Yeah.
But we think they're just great.
What's your music?
I go to Juilliard. Yeah. That's classical. It's all classical.
Yeah, what is it?
This is Italian arias and things. I just think they're the greatest.
I remember a time when there was a young man by the name of Frank Sinatra who generated this kind of excitement and this kind of a spark. And I don't think it's bad.
So now we're talking February 64. Things have built up pretty fast.
Things really have, because, you know, the record came out at the end of December, and Meet the Beatles, the first American album, came out in January. Radio stations were all over it. I think disc jockeys, especially in those days, who knows, maybe still it's a different kind of world of disc jockeys now, but had, you know, an innate sense of what was going to be big. And so you got people like Murray the Kay and Cousin Brucey on ABC and others who saw immediately that this was the thing to glom mm-hmm. onto. So you had
to glom they did.
Yeah, they sure did.
So the Beatles, I mean, they came here, of course, to perform on the Ed Sullivan Show,
right,
which they did 2 days after landing. So mm-hmm. Sunday is the 50th anniversary of that. The first song on the first Sullivan appearance is All My Loving. What do you make of that they chose that song and not I Want to Hold Your Hand, for example.
All My Lovin' is a song that parents like. I mean, it's a song kids now, like,
yeah,
too. Well, now, but I mean, actually, pretty quickly, parents began to see that as a great melody. And, I mean, I know mine did. Mine were pretty dismissive of the Beatles at first, but All My Lovin' was the first thing they focused on is, you know, this is actually not bad.
Well, maybe they recognize the cross-generational nature of Ed Sullivan's audience. We're playing to the kids in the cheap seats, but the adults down in front as well. All My Lovin' from the Beatles.
And then while I'm away, I'll ride home every day, and I'll send all my lovin' to you. I'll pretend that I'm missing the lips I am missing, and hope that my dreams will come true. And then while I'm away, I'll ride home every day, and I'll send all my loving to you. All my loving I will send to you. All my loving, darling, I'll be true.
Today is the 50th anniversary of the Beatles' landing in New York at JFK Airport. Two evenings later, the first of three shows, Alan,
right,
at the Ed Sullivan Show. And they were paid the grand sum of
$10,000,
which, I mean, in those days was not chump change, but still.
It wasn't chump change, but it was actually less than Sullivan paid for certain other, you know, top name acts. I mean, Sullivan got a deal from his point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Epstein got a deal from his point of view because he got three shows for the Beatles. And, you know, and Ed Sullivan didn't totally know who the Beatles were. I mean, there's this story of him arriving at London Airport and seeing the Beatles come back from Sweden and all the ruckus going on there and saying, you know, who is this? And he claimed he signed them right away. But it's not really what happened. There is actually some question whether he was even at London Airport, but I've never got totally to the bottom of that. But when he came back, Brian Epstein arranged a meeting with him in November 63 when he was here on a, you know, trying to stir some stuff up for the Beatles. And Sullivan, you know, asked his assistant, who are the Beatles? You know, and somehow or other, Brian persuaded him. And he took a chance, signed them on for three shows. And by the time the shows came around in February, it was really clear that, you know, this is the main event of these shows.
And who else? What were the other acts that were on those Ed Sullivan shows?
Well, Wells and the Four Fays. Do you remember them?
No.
I don't really either, and I've watched that show many times. I think they were sort of like an acrobatic kind of act. But there was a scene in the first show, there was a scene from Oliver, which starred Georgia Brown. But also the Artful Dodger was young David Jones, who later became the Davy Jones of the Monkees.
Wow.
So it's kind of interesting that on that show you had the Beatles and their event. Eventual TV imitators.
We're speaking with Alan Kozin, music critic for the New York Times. His most recent ebook is Got That Something, How the Beatles' I Want to Hold Your Hand Changed Everything. He also wrote the biography The Beatles, From the Cavern to the Rooftop, marking the 50th anniversary of their arrival in the U.S. today, 50 years ago. You mentioned Brian Epstein, who was the Beatles' manager, got them this deal, this unusual deal with Ed Sullivan. He was a classical music guy by inclination.
I mean, right.
He sort of fell in with the Beatles. You also have done a lot of classical music writing for the New York Times over the years. What is it about the Beatles? I mean, Leonard Bernstein also sort of cottoned on to the Beatles pretty quickly. Glenn Gould, what is it about classical music fans and the Beatles?
I think that classical music fans who listen to the music can see that there's something going on there. You know, there's interesting harmonic progressions. You know, the Beatles tended, except in very few cases, to avoid the basic 1-4-5 progression that was the sort of blues progression that's the heart of a lot of rock.
Right.
They tended to like unusual chords, unusual harmonies, and they were great melodists. Leonard Bernstein called them the Schuberts of our time.
If I trust in you, oh please, don't run and hide. If I love you too, oh please, don't hurt my pride like her, 'cause I couldn't stand the pain, and I would be sad if I
found an article from 1964, early 64, it was in the New York Times, in which a reporter interviewed Leopold Stokowski about the Beatles.
The great conductor, yeah.
Yeah, who was at that point, you know, relatively up there age-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And he was actually very in favor as well, although his reasons were a little different. He wasn't coming out necessarily for or against the music as such. What he recognized was whatever it is that young kids see in this, it's making them love music.
Yeah.
And anything that makes people love music is, in his book, a good thing.
Yep.
So.
All right. So the guy who famously shook hands with Mickey Mouse in Fantasia... Big
That's
fan
right.
of the Beatles as well. We're talking with Alan Cozen about the 50th anniversary of the Beatles. By this point, February 7th, 1964, how much Beatles stuff is there for their screaming fans? Is it just the one record and a couple of singles? Is that it?
You mean in 1964?
Yeah.
Well, there was Meet the Beatles. There were a handful of singles because the early singles that came out on VJ and Swan were and did nothing in the United States in 1963 were immediately reissued because the companies that had the rights to them saw the possibilities. There were tons of instant publication magazines, you know, pictures of the Beatles and semi-fictitious stories about their lives and some real information
yeah.
here and there. But
what were those singles, the VJ and the Swan songs, the ones that initially did nothing? What were they?
Right, Please Please Me and Ask Me Why, From Me to You and Thank You Girl, and then on Swan there was She Loves You and I'll Get You.
Mm-hmm. Hard to believe that this song might have been issued and nearly sank without a trace, but let's hear She Loves You from the Beatles.
She loves you, yeah.
Marking the 50th anniversary of the Beatles' arrival in the United States. They landed at JFK on this day 50 years ago. Are we now in for the next 7 years? For like every day is the 50th anniversary of the Beatles doing something for the first time, you know?
Well, sure, John. In fact, actually, you know, if you're fascinated with this stuff, that started in October 2012 when it was the 50th anniversary of the release of Love Me Do.
Uh-huh, right.
But, you know, keep in mind, we got the 50th anniversary of Sgt. Pepper coming up in 2017
mm-hmm.
and the White Album 2018, then the tragic breakup in 2020.
All this week, Alan, we've been talking, in the run-up to the Sochi Olympics about music in Russia, mm-hmm. including talking about that Samizdat, the underground stuff. Mm-hmm. In the 60s, any idea how much of the youth culture movement that was so evident here in the West was actually going on there?
There apparently was a bunch. And there's a book you might have seen called How the Beatles Rocked the Kremlin by Leslie Woodard. He spent some time in the Soviet Union, and he talked to people and got to hear what they were interested in and how. And, officially the Soviet Union really seriously disliked the Beatles. They were obviously, Western degraded decadence. And it's interesting because the very right wing in the United States also liked the Beatles because they were, they were going to make your kids be into communism. In fact, there was an author named David Nobel who used to write these tracts about, what was evil about the Beatles, and one of them was called Communism, Hypnotism, and the Beatles. So it's a weird mirror image.
At least it's a clever title.
So
unofficially, officially, Beatles were sort of persona non grata in the Soviet Union. So is there any evidence that that this youth culture thing, that this surreptitious drip of Beatles music into the Soviet Union sort of opened floodgates for something later?
Yeah, I'm not sure if there's actual evidence, but people who live there say so. And even, behind the Iron Curtain, Václav Havel used to say,
President of the Czech Republic,
He spoke about it, and even I think he wrote an op-ed piece in the New York Times about how the Beatles were so important to him, at that time and, through.
You could definitely, if someone had said the Beatles sounded like freedom or a breath of fresh air to us behind the curtain, you could imagine how it could feel that way to someone.
Sure.
Just from the sound, the way their records were made,
Right. They're living in a fairly grim society, even just materially. We're talking about people standing online to get bread, boots, whatever. And what they're hearing is these cassettes or tapes of this music that supposedly everybody is listening to in the West, and it sounds like we're having a really great time. And, we were. So that has to have been attractive to them. And, it's funny because over the years I've run into in collector shops these strange melodia pressings of EPs and LPs of Beatles stuff, which was not authorized.
Yeah, because Melodia was the state-run record label.
So, I wonder if it was really Melodia or bootleg with a Melodia label, because neither EMI had authorized Russian releases because, they supposedly were banned from there, and the Russian state label wouldn't have put out the stuff either. So who knows what these records were, but the sound was pretty, awful.
Samizdat culture strikes again.
There you go.
Alan Kozin is a music critic for the New York Times. His recent ebook is called Got That Something? How the Beatles' I Wanna Hold Your Hand Changed Everything. You could say everything changed on this date 50 years ago when the Beatles landed here in the U.S. for the first time. Alan, thanks once again for joining us.
Thank you, John.
This is Soundcheck.
Oh, yeah, I tell you something. I think you'll understand. When I say that something, I want to hold your hand. I want to hold your hand. I want to hold your hand.
Thanks for listening. Stay connected by subscribing to the Soundcheck podcast on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and download the new WNYC mobile app for free. See you next time. I'm John Schaefer.
Let me hold your hand. I want to hold your hand. And when I touch you, I feel happy inside. It's such a feeling that my love